And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauck.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are in this world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today and every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And each and every week, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I place all this all within the context of our relationships with ourselves and others and God or the divine. And perhaps this is your first time tuning in. Welcome to the broadcast. And I'd just like to share a little bit of why I place this integration of spirituality and mental health in a greater context of relationships, because this is something that was instilled in me a while ago, you know, that whenever we think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in relationships. However, we can also discover our greatest healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. Because whenever we transform, we also transform others. And we do this often through our presence or moments of grace and our understanding. But first and foremost, the transformation begins with us. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And in case you're not able to listen to all of this show, you know, these broadcasts are podcasted. So in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows that you may have missed. And again, for those of you new to the program, I also like to share, and you've people who've been with me for a while now, you've heard me say this time and time again, that I am a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in life in terms of our, let's say, our skills, our talents, our giftedness, our personality, our strengths, character traits, and so forth. And yet, as we go along in life, and perhaps due to some unpleasant experiences, we may think that we need to hide what's very unique about us, that we need to hide the very best of ourselves, or we push that giftedness way down so that others cannot see it, because we might feel as though, well, if we show this to others, they're going to take it and exploit it, or they're going to just further wound us, or ridicule, or shame, or whatever we think is going to happen. Or perhaps, maybe as you were growing up, you were told that you would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice you heard, you know, telling you that there was nothing special to you. Okay, but at any rate, when we listen to these comments, you know, and we push our giftedness down, we don't realize the very best things in us, the very best things that are just waiting to come out. And we go through life functioning from a place of woundedness or a place of victimhood, instead of a place of healing and wholeness, and instead of embracing our hachiatos, our uniqueness. In fact, if you would just keep in mind that there is so much more to you than what you have become so far. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding that courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Well, how is your heart today? I hope you are well, and I hope it is well. I hope that even if you are struggling today, that you'll be able to find some rest or comfort and the peace that you need. Well, today we have a treat for everyone. We have with us the author of her new book, Trauma to Triumph, Lessons Learned Along the Way, Sandra Cooper. And you can order this book through Amazon.com. And I have to say, I've been reading this book, and I have to tell you, it is a powerful, powerful story. And I shared with Sandy before asking her to come on to the show. I started reading the book one night, and in no time, I was on page 60, 65. You know, it just, the story just carries you along, and you just get caught up. And it's that engaging. It's that intriguing. Okay, but just a brief while, Sandra will be sharing some of her personal stories of her experiences and how she learned not to be defined and not dominated by trauma. But she'll also share how she learned to live triumphantly in her present life. She's a registered nurse as well as a licensed mental health counselor in Delaware. And if you would like to call in and talk with Sandy or share your own story from how you are moving from trauma to triumph, I invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008. Again, it's 888-627-6008. So without further ado, I just want to welcome to the broadcast Sandy Cooper. Sandy, are you there?
I am here. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, good to hear your voice. Yeah. All right. well, we don't live too far from. Well, I'm sorry, say that again.
It was a lovely intro you just gave.
Oh, well, I meant every word of it. And, you being in Delaware, me being at the very southern tip of Pennsylvania, we don't live too close from each other. And, as I said, as I talked to you, albeit through emails, that just really enjoyed the book. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to come on the radio and just share your story. So I appreciate your willingness and your availability.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's see. How about just for people who don't know you, won't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what do you do today?
Well, as you stated, my first career was as an RN. I was a registered nurse for about 10 or 15 years and went back to grad school in my, early 40s, about 10 years or more ago. Because I decided it was time to become a counselor. I did some hospice nursing, and that transitioned me into my second career as a licensed professional counselor. And so I'm in private practice, as you said, in Delaware, and it is probably where I show up as my most authentic self. I love it. It's where I get to really, it's really what the discovery of my life was what those gifts were that I had and then being able to put that into practice.
Yeah. 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 And that's a great way to describe it because, I meet a lot of people and I also teach others to become licensed therapists and they go on and so forth. And in that discovery, there's a lot of integration of where have I been? Who am I? And who am I becoming? And a lot of the students, future professional counselors, they find out who they are. They find out that, their power of their presence and just being able to sit with people in their confusion or frustration or their pain. And certainly, identifying with everything you just said, I hear those kinds of explanations of, I never knew I would be able to do something like this, but the more I got into it, the more things just opened up. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we actually get into the book, I just wanted to read for everybody. One of the things that really struck me about this book was the preface. I mean, the first thing I laid my eyes on. And what you write, again, is just a nice summary and just, okay, people, before I tell you my story, put on your seatbelt and because you're in for a ride, okay? So for our listeners, here's the preface. This memoir is not a chronology of my life or experiences. It is an assortment of my understanding of some of my life experiences. My expression of them came with their own cadence and rhythm, and you will find that reflected in my writing. Becoming what we want to be is a process. Knowing who we are is a challenge. True transformation is an internal change that happens organically over time. Although it has been known to happen abruptly, more often it is slow. Often we must look back at how we used to be fully appreciate, at how we used to be to fully appreciate how we are now and how far we have come. Growth is life's invitation to us all. It requires awareness, the desire to change, and the hopes to be the very best version of yourself. It is my hope that you will gain more understanding into your own life experiences as you turn these pages. So, as I said, that's just a very powerful preface to your story. And like I said, I just felt like I needed to put on the proverbial seatbelt and just hang on, because here we go, you know. So, yep. What was it like to write a book like this for you? What was that like?
You know, it was difficult. It was, you know, the book itself has three phases, but my writing of the book actually has two. And the first phase was very challenging. It was frustrating at times, and it was painful. You know, as much work as I had done to heal, you know, past experiences and traumas and to figure out who I was, in the writing of it, I went even deeper. There was more healing that had to be done, and I often felt anxious just reading my own story. You know, my anxiety would kick in. Which is where I am now, very cathartic and very satisfying, and there was some real closure that came with this book. There was another level of freeing myself up from that past. Closing the door on the past so that I can be more fully present now.
Right. Yeah. And that's often the power of storytelling. You know, it's one thing to, to write things down, you know, in a journal or a diary, and that's powerful in and of itself, because whenever we write out our story or write out experiences, that is 50 times more powerful. However, when we start to tell those stories, we start to talk about them, we start to share them, and we hear ourselves in our own voice telling our stories, not from a place of woundedness, but from a place of healing, it you know, we can go back if we record our voices, but we can go back and we can listen to how differently we sound from the time we were wounded to, you know, now, like you said, in the present time, where you're more empowered and it's more life-giving. So, yeah, I can certainly imagine at times it was difficult to read your own words or to listen to your own story and what that must have been like, you know, for the first time. So how did you decide it was time to share your story? Like,
well, you know, I actually started drafting this book about 5 years ago, and okay. I did it out of a sense of rebellion. I was frustrated. I was angry. I felt like I was shut down too much. I couldn't find my voice. I didn't feel heard. I didn't feel understood. And so, you know, out of a little bit of rebellion, I said, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to write a book. That'll really show everybody, right?
And I'm chuckling because, you know, I'm right there with you. You know, it's like right. writing books are just powerful, powerful means. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So, but in that process of wanting that voice and being frustrated with being shut down, I worked through that to the point where it no longer was so important to be heard. It was no longer so important for people to acknowledge me or understand me, because I had gotten a deeper understanding of myself. I had begun to acknowledge myself. And so I really found peace with it all. And at that point, I tucked the book away and did nothing with it for probably another 2 or 3 years. And so it was actually earlier this year, I unexpectedly got a text from my sister. And this is, you know, I have several sisters, and this one, you know, I hadn't really talked to her a whole lot about the book other than the fact that I had been working on one at some point. And she just sent me a text, and she said, I think you're supposed to finish your book. And that felt like the message from beyond. And so that's what I spent 2020 doing, is pulling that out and going through the process of finally getting it published.
Yeah. Wow. Now, is your sister who encouraged you to write this book, is she listening today?
I don't know.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I don't know if she's listening today. She was one on the fringes. She was a little bit more, in other words, I didn't share a lot of this with her. You know, when I was writing the book or deciding to write it, I held it pretty close to my chest. I didn't really share a whole lot with anybody.
Right. Right.
And so I really don't know. She could be working for all I know, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, if she's listening, welcome. Yeah. But it's just, you know, just I'm listening to the irony of this, that even though she didn't know the full content of what you were writing, you know, she was the one that reached out and said, I think it's time. You know, I think it's, you know, you need to come back to this. And,
right.
You know, who knows what was stirring in her to be able to, you know, shoot you that text, like you said, and just
right.
encourage you, like, come on now, you've let this collect dust for a long enough time. Let's get going with it. So,
yeah. Yep. And yeah. It felt like the right thing to do. And so that's what I did. So here we are.
Okay. I tell you, it's funny. Different ways, you know, I would say that God works in our lives, often through others, and they have no idea that, you know, they're the hands or the voice of God or an answer to prayer, you know, and so forth. And yeah, just that little nudge from your sister is like, okay, that it sounds like that gave you the permission to go ahead and continue writing and to finish it.
Yes. And it, you know, it's one of those things too, where, and I'm sure you'll understand this, that it's one thing for me to think about writing it and wanting to write it. It's a whole other thing when I feel like the universe is saying, this is what you need to do. I think I needed it to come from outside of me at that point. Because, you know, some of the challenges of writing it is wondering how family would receive it. Because it's not an easy read for family.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I was apprehensive about that.
Yeah, and that's, you know, certainly a concern, because, you know, everything that you had worked through and what you sharing your story on pages, what brought you to that point, you know, for family members to be hearing it for the first time, you know, you may have worked through a lot, but for them, it could have really overwhelmed them or said, we had no idea, or, you know, whatever response of, you know, we didn't know. You know, we didn't know everything
right.
you went through, you know, so yeah, a little bit of wisdom there, you know, definitely to, you know, just, you know, take them into consideration as well, you know, but one of the questions I was actually going to save till after the break, I'll go ahead and say it, you know, I'll ask you that now, since it fits, is that, you know, how or what has been the responses of others who have read your book?
You know, I've gotten some really lovely, lovely responses. Now, it's only been out a month, but they've been really varied. I have had those who said, wow, I had no idea that you went through all that. I had no idea what was going on in your home. And they came with a lot of compassion and an increased understanding of me. I've had some responses of, you know, I get my own life a little bit better. I understand my own experiences a little bit better. Which is really what I'm shooting for, right? That it's not just about me. It's about people beginning to try and look at their own lives in a similar way to understand themselves more deeply. And others just really identified with the, you know, the oppressive nature of our society and culture and the damages that we do to each other. It resonated, obviously, for a lot of people. And so they've been some nice, humbling responses.
Yeah. And, you know, I am convinced time and time again, whenever we share our stories or we share, you know, stories that have really touched our lives in a way, indirectly, that gives other people permission to share their stories. you know, because right. they see what it takes to talk about these things, and they see and they hear the transformation. And, you know, that's something that's probably like way down in the core of who they are, just something that I've always been crying out for myself. And yet if this person can do it, wow, that, you know, by God's grace, you know, I can find my own way. I can find my own voice to share my right. story. Yeah. Yeah, so it is yeah. it's powerful. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. Good stuff.
Oh yeah, always. So I'm just curious. I don't know if anybody else out there in radio land, internet radio land, that is, if you've picked up the book. But I was curious, the front cover, and Sandy, you and I talked through email a little bit about this. But talk a little bit about the backpack and all the patches that are on there. You know, it's just it's fascinating, you know, the metaphor of that. And how did you come up with that picture or that metaphor? What how is it significant for you?
Well, I'm not sure I even understood how significant it was until you and I really started talking a little bit more about it. So, mm-hmm. You know, we all have that understanding of, you know, we all carry baggage, right? Everybody has baggage. And mm-hmm. you know, that baggage really alludes to the unresolved emotional issues, the traumas, the internalized voices that oppress us and dismiss us. And so I had quite a bit of baggage at that point. So when I made the decision to travel to Europe for 4 months, I really needed to get physical distance from those voices and from that internalized mm-hmm. Pressure that I was always feeling. So the backpack, that was mine. That was, I had to decide what was going to go in that backpack. I was going to be carrying it for 4 months, so I needed to be a minimalist, or I was going to feel really weighed down and heavy. So when I got to London, and as I write in the early pages of my book, you know, and I'm standing there in Piccadilly Circus, the backpack on my back, and I'm standing there alone, and I'm exhausted from the travel, and I feel exhilarated. I feel freer than I've ever felt in my life. I felt lighter than I had ever felt in my life, and the backpack sort of fits that. I left the baggage behind. The stuff, you know, our life journey is really about trying to unload what's not ours. Which never was, yeah. And we can't get to our authentic selves until we begin to put that down. So I think that, you know, the backpack sort of represents me owning what's mine. And you know, when I left from Philadelphia, I had one lone patch on that backpack, which was the USA patch. And I was alone. I felt alone. And through my travels in Europe, the experiences, the wonderful people, It changed me, and as I accumulated patches, it sort of spoke to my connectedness. I didn't feel so alone. That patch was no longer alone. All those patches that surrounded it sort of reflect my own feeling of having gathered up a lot of love and a lot of understanding and a lot of global awareness and consciousness that I hadn't had before. And so it really connected me to something bigger than myself.
Right.
And I was just going to say, so when I came home, I no longer had that feeling of aloneness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just, I mean, it's a powerful metaphor in and of itself, just talking about the journey, you know, that our lives take. And, you know, the patches for me, you know, just symbolize where I have been or where you have been. And so I just wondered, were they ever like conversation starters or pieces for people who are like, oh, you've been to France or, oh, you know, you've been here or there? Were people just curious of your story along the way?
It absolutely was. I mean, when I was in Europe, now that backpack's been tucked away for some years, but, you know, at the time, sure, when I went to the different hostels and the places I stayed and people would see it and we'd have conversations and we'd share moments and experiences, and it was, you know, there was a sharing of self, and in a new way, in a way that didn't where I wasn't defined by my past or by my traumas. It was a very present way of being to each other. Just the camaraderie of travel and where do we come from and how did we get here without all the heaviness of what we left behind, maybe.
And again, just staying with the backpack, I think it's such a powerful metaphor. I mean, you talked about you had to pack light. You know, you had you know, just the bare essentials in a sense. And now, just staying with the metaphor, were there things in which, you know, when you were on this journey and learning the lessons along the way, were there things metaphorically that you had to take out of that backpack that you were still carrying, which started to really weigh you down? And then what did you add to the backpack as you were going along?
That's a good question. I did. I mean, that's, you know, we could probably talk forever about some of these kinds of things, right? I mean, I had to unload the isolation, the feeling that nobody cares about me, that I don't matter. Mm. That was a lot of what I was carrying, that I didn't have significance. Because I always, even as a child, I think I had an awareness of things that it seemed people around me did not have. I saw things that others didn't seem to see. And I wanted to speak to it, but it wasn't permitted. My voice was, I was silenced. It just wasn't, you didn't have those kinds of conversations. And so I did learn to devalue myself. So I think they were some of the things that I had to unload. And I had to begin to, and that's what made the trip transformative in some ways, too, was you talk about that mirroring at the start of the show, right? The healthy relationships versus the not so healthy ones. And who's mirroring back to us who we are. So I really got some beautiful mirroring that began to show me my own goodness and my own worth, and that people did like me, and I did have something to say, and they wanted to hear it. And so I traded out some of those negative experiences with some of the more positive experiences that said more about who I was, who I wanted to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it just sounds like, you know, really discovering your voice, your authentic voice, you know, that wasn't laden with pain or trauma or something. But no, this is who I am. This is, you know, this is the voice that I came into the world with, you know, and rediscovering that and reclaiming that, you know, very powerful, very freeing. Well, before we take a, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just said to know what's good, and to know what's good when we do reclaim that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Well, before we take a break here, can you just share, you know, one moment in your life that was, you know, very transformative? Something that you recall either from the book or?
Well, I'll tell you what really came to mind for me, and this was actually more recent. I mean, when I was at Newman University, and it's sitting in Dr. Joanne Wolski Kahn's class. And I hadn't thought about her for a very long time. But sitting in and talking about feminine theology, and that was a really big moment for me to hear the voice of women interpreting scripture in such beautiful and inclusive ways gave me permission to start asking questions to challenge the status quo. And I came to understand how much is lost because the voice of women had been silenced and is often silenced in the church. But even more so, I realized how much of myself was lost and how much had been forfeited because of the ways I had been taught and conditioned. You know, that's when the trouble really started, because I think that's when I discovered I was a bit of a feminist and started getting a little bit more pussy with my opinions. Which everyone didn't appreciate, but that's just a part of the process of finding that voice.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, on down through history, mainly with women, but just people in general, like, if you're a troublemaker or if you're one who steps outside the fringes of society or you're just in the way, you know, everybody, you know, who doesn't appreciate that says, okay, well, we'll take care of you. We'll silence you. And by that means, you know, there's killing or some sort of violence. And in my own research and experiences, you know, it's that voice is never silenced. you know, your voice might be silenced, so to speak, you know, if you are killed, but I still believe that the dead do talk, and they talk in many different ways. And I mean, yep. We just see this clearly down through history that whenever a group of people were tried to be silenced, those voices get louder, or they inspire other people to, well, okay, that's not going to stop us because truth is truth, and this is our truth, and this is what we want people to hear. And it just, on one hand, you know, it's very heartbreaking. It is just unbelievable, you know, what humanity has done to humanity down through the history. But it's also, it's not comical. I don't want to say that, but it's just mind-blowing that this is the one lesson that humanity has never learned. It's like you're never going to be able to silence the human voice because there is such power in that. And when people find their authentic voice, look out. Just stand back because, you know, you're not going to stop it. You know, as history has tried to do, it's just, you know, even today, you know, people want to silence somebody else. And it's like that's not going to happen. You may think you are, but the voice will just get stronger and stronger because the energy can never be taken away from somebody who finds their voice. So it's just, you know, powerful lesson that's handed down through history. So, all right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break. And just to remind everybody that if you'd like to call in, that number again is 888-627-6008. And if you want to talk with Sandra or to maybe to share one of your own stories, I'll be taking your calls after the break. And again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and we will be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, before we move forward in the show, I just want to share a word about next week's broadcast, Friday, January 29th. It is entitled The Intertwined Characteristics of Forgiveness and Gratitude. Intertwined characteristics of forgiveness and gratitude. And we will be discussing the depth of how forgiveness and gratitude are not only intertwined in our lives, but also to the point of how they bring out our authentic selves in very powerful, life-changing ways. So just invite you to mark your calendars now for next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. Well, if you are just joining us, we are talking with Sandra Cooper, author of her new book, Trauma to Triumph, Lessons Learned Along the Way. And we are very pleased to have Sandy with us. She is a registered nurse, and she's also a licensed professional counselor in Delaware. So again, Sandy, welcome back after the break.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, Let's continue with some more questions and just, you know, really appreciate what you have been sharing so far. I guess one of the questions I had was, you know, what was it like to really step outside your comfort zone at times? Because there was one moment where you had talked about your first experience being in a charismatic church and how that was different, let's say, from the way you were raised or what you were even expected.
Yeah, you know, I was putting myself out there in so many ways. You know, interestingly enough, I think that if I'm being honest with myself, I was pretty uncomfortable in my own skin. So I had gotten more comfortable with being uncomfortable. But I think there was such a seeking in me. It was so strong, this drive to find whatever it was I was looking for, which I wasn't clear on at the time. I was used to sort of being uncomfortable. I was used to being in an environment that didn't really acknowledge me or where I felt sort of anonymous. And that was comfortable for me. So it's sort of a dichotomy there. You know, it was neat to see these other people doing things very different than what I had. It opened up my eyes. It allowed me to get a deeper understanding of myself, of what was important to me, what I wanted, what worked for me and what didn't. And I believe that discomfort is an invitation. I think that's an invitation from God, from the universe, to say, okay, come on, let's step into this and let's discover more of you through this. Mm-hmm. It was okay. It was just where I was.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because the way you describe it, it's like, ooh, you know, you can, the feelings in which you had written that section was just very palpable. It was just, you know, you'd almost feel like you're standing beside you experiencing all these things. And, you know, just a powerful way in which you described that. And, you know, the metaphor, going back to the metaphor of the backpack, of just you're on a journey and, you know, you just kind of threw away the map and, you know, and that's stepping outside your comfort zone right there. You know, you just didn't have a map to follow. You're just like, okay, here we go. And I collect patches along the way to kind of show where I've been or, you know, hey, Sandy was here. But, you know, yeah, it's just, I like the way you put it. Just, you know, being comfortable with the uncomfortableness. Or getting used to that and just allowing, you know, just being open to allow, you know, things to unfold in your life as it was needed or as it was time. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were all learning experience, just, you know, seeing people openly express themselves, especially in the charismatic church. And they just were openly joyful. And that was so foreign for me. And I loved it, but I couldn't do it. I didn't know how to feel the joy, and I didn't know how to express it in the ways that I saw people doing. And it fascinated me, and I thought, okay, I want more of this. I want to not care what everybody's thinking about me, you know, what their opinion is. I want to be comfortable whether people like me or not. And so that was a big step for me.
That is huge, because I'm sure you run into this with your clients. You know, my clients are like, well, authenticity sounds great, but I'm still trapped with this. I care what other people think about me, you know, and they hate to admit it, to say, yes, I'm still dependent on that. And it's a struggle for them to kind of shift something inside of themselves to say, I'm going to affirm my own self. I'm not going to look for the exclusive affirmations or encouragement from others. You know, it's nice when we have those things. It's wonderful. We all need that. But, you know, ultimately, you know, it comes from within to say, you know, in spite of the circumstances, this is who I am and I love myself.
Right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it looks messy and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but that's life sometimes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we're talking about the church and everything, I just want to just call your attention to one page that just really, again, jumped out at me. And I start, like, you know, underlining and circling and everything that I do. All my books are all marked up just because, you know, I just want to go back and like, oh, yeah, that was a great point. But it's on page 159. And you ask these questions, and then you come down to a powerful statement of that just takes you into deeper and deeper questions. And the part I'm referring to is you ask, who is this God that I have been talking to most of my life? If it is a God that condemns anyone for being born into another faith, then it was not a God with which I necessarily wanted to associate. I did not understand why so many people thought that way. I often felt different from people around me. I often felt misunderstood. And then at the bottom of the page, you know, another profound statement. Jesus never, ever made anyone the outsider. So why do we? He never excluded anyone. So why do we? He frequently challenged the hierarchy and the leadership of the church. So why don't we? Why do they know me better than me? Do they know better than me? And again, that's just a powerful, not only insight, but also reflection to come to that realization and to raise those questions. And, you know, how did that take you deeper into this journey of discovering who you are and embracing who you are?
Well, if we believe that God, divine, is in each of us, then how does someone else necessarily know better than me? And so, again, these were moments where I started to move from an outer authority to an inner authority. And I began to trust myself. I began to recognize my own intuition, my own gifts, my own knowing, without necessarily understanding why I knew. I just knew. And so it was another level of embracing myself and challenging what I had been told. And it's not to say that everything I was told was wrong by any stretch of the imagination. But when I was uncomfortable with what I was being told, I never spoke up. I just swallowed it and kind of kept moving. And so in those moments, when I'm grappling with the church during that time, I really start asking the questions. I'm in a place where I'm much more confident. I'm less fearful of the abandonment or the rejection, and I'm just rocking the boat. And it was a part of what I needed to do to really own who I am and to shed that baggage that wasn't mine to begin with. The messages I got, the things I'd been told that just didn't fit with what I believed about life.
Yeah. Like I said, that was a powerful revelation, just powerful insight. And I mean, I always got the metaphor like, hey, that just exploded something in you. You know, that, and that just, you know, hey, I'm on this journey. That takes me really deep into this. Because in finding your own voice, you know, finding your own strength, finding your own grace, finding everything that you believed at one time was just not meant for you, and what that was like to just embrace those things and to own them and to live unapologetic.
That's exactly right.
Well, for those who are listening and those who would like to order the book, is there anything else that you would like other women out there who may have been going through similar things or just women in general? Is there anything that you would want them to know?
Yeah, I mean, to be who you are rather than who you think you should be. You know, we get so many messages. Everybody does, male and female alike, but we get so many messages about our worth and our value. And, you know, we don't even recognize, you know, we live in a patriarchal culture. That's the world we live in. And we don't even recognize the ways we've internalized that experience. And so don't question where we fit in the world. I want them to know who they are. I want them to know their value. I want them to know that they're stronger than they know and deserve better than they've gotten. And I want for them what you want for them, which is to reclaim their authenticity, and know that it's more than good enough. Because when we do that, then we challenge the world to change.
Yeah, definitely a powerful statement. And is that, you know, everything you just shared, have you seen that as coming up with the women that you work with in your practice?
Oh, all the time. I mean, so many of them. we get this idea, you know, we graduate high school, maybe we go to college, then we fall in love, we get a boyfriend or a husband, then we have babies, and this is my life. And nobody stops to really think about who am I before they make those decisions. And so many find themselves trapped in situations that are just woefully wrong, but they get stuck a lot of times. And then it's a lot of work to undo that because we don't stop to really understand who we are. We just follow the path that's been laid out for us in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, absolutely. And so many women who really have been taught that their physical, the way they look physically is what matters. That's where their value is. They objectify themselves in a lot of ways. And that's okay. The internalized voice of culture.
Right, right. Well, see, I know that we didn't really kick this question around a lot beforehand, but I just, as I was reading your book, I'm thinking to myself, you know, where are the lessons for the men who pick up your book and read it? What lessons do you want them to learn, or what do you want them to know about themselves and the relationships that they're in?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, my book is for humans, right? So in the sense that, you know, we all have trauma. We all have internalized voices. We all have expectations placed on us, and we all have to figure out what works for me, what doesn't, who am I? And men have that same experience. Now, if they don't understand, if they don't understand the way the patriarchy affects women and girls and the way that we're socialized, and men are socialized in their own harmful ways, but if they can get a deeper understanding of what that experience is, then they become a part of the change that has to happen, not just for women, but for themselves. I mean, the denial of the feminine everywhere hurts everybody. And that, to me, that's a big part of what has to be reclaimed. I mean, even that idea of God being he, well, how convenient, right? God becomes he, men I become God. I mean, somebody quoted that. It wasn't me. That's not original. But I think that's the thinking a lot of times, that they're superior. And I get why they think that, because that's how they're taught and raised. And we're taught to be inferior. And so that's some of the shift that I think is happening now in our world, I hope. But men have their own healing to do, for sure.
Right, right. And I, you know, have a good mixture of my own clientele of men and women. But the men, it's just incredible the woundedness they carry around in trying to live up to that image that society puts out there, right? And say, okay, if you want to be, you know, a man in today's world, this is what you need to be. This is what you need to do. And a lot of them just, I mean, we talk over the, you know, telemental health, and it's like, I can't do this. I just, you know, because as soon as I try to get closer, the standard keeps moving. And right. That's, you know, of course, that's the big lie. You know, it's just like it's never going to stay still for you to achieve it, because it's always going to move and it's always going to be just out of reach. And some of the most powerful transformations that I've seen in men and how they begin to value relationships is how they get in touch with their heart. And I'm convinced that for men, males in general, their greatest strength is their heart. And, you know, and just, you know, even women have mentioned this too, you know, the ones I talk to. And, you know, they just, you know, men have such a gift, a strength of their heart, but just they are afraid to let that out. They're afraid to show it. They're afraid to speak up. They're afraid to, well, this is what my heart's telling me in this situation. It's almost as if, okay, well, that's fine and everything, wonderful, but what's your head telling you? You know, and they go back to, you know, this logical reasoning, which is fine. You know, we all have minds, but they often ignore what their heart is saying, and they want to disregard their feelings, or they want to disregard, you know, the fact that men and women are a combination of both. You know, men have testosterone and estrogen. Women have estrogen and testosterone. And, you know, these differences are not just, you know, gender exclusive, but it's the, you know, the male, the female energy that we both have. But whenever we downplay one or we stifle the other, we're really shortchanging ourselves. You know, we're not living in the fullness of who we are, whether it be men or women. And so that's, you know, I put that out there because a lot of men are, you know, like trying to live up to this standard that, you know, they never get to. Or if they think they get to it, it's such a disappointment, you know, because they thought it would be transformative in some way. And it's like, I just get this feeling that I'm just never going to have enough money in the bank, or I'm never going to have the body that, you know, other men say that you need to have in order to be desirable or whatever. Men certainly struggle with this too, but it's this ongoing. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's the socialization of boys and girls, because there's a lot of girls who want their man to be strong and logical and figure it all out and take care of them. And that's the denial of their masculine side. And then men feel the pressure to live up to that, and they can't. And so it really is so much about the ways that we avoid ourselves. And because a lot of women want their men to be the knight in shining armor. And that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure.
Right. And like you said, it's this conditioning of boys and girls. And we get that when we are infants, you know, or toddlers, or, you know, these bedtime stories that are read to us, you know, and they lived happily ever after. And there was this damsel in distress, and you have this knight in shining armor coming through and saving the day and, you know, and riding off into the sunset. And I mean, we get that image in our heads as young boys and young girls, and we just realize that, whoops, that's not reality. You know, it might make for good stories or movies and whatnot, but, you know, it's just, how do you live that out 24/7? And, you know, when reality comes in, what's that? Say that, Sandy, again.
It's just very limiting, you know, the socialization, the way we limit boys and girls to become less than, trying to meet something that they can't meet. That's just not realistic. And it's pretty twisted up. It's a lot of work to do, a lot of changing that needs to be happened. At least the Disney movies have changed in a positive direction, so I'm happy for that. You know, because I did grow up with the knight in shining armor, and I resented it then.
You had mentioned that there's this fear out there of at least being open to having the discussion of realizing the incompleteness of who we are without one another. And is there anything else that comes up with the women or men that you talk to other than fear? Is there also other things that might be holding them back or something from entertaining the possibility of, like, we need to respect one another in order to find ourselves?
Right. I mean, I think you have to risk rejection and abandonment and humiliation. I mean, I think that's what keeps people stuck because, you know, and again, you know, we're changing as more people of, you know, transgender and the gay, you know, movement, people begin to become more authentically them and step into that role. We're going to get, I hope, more comfortable with diversity, with difference. And know that it's okay to own all parts of ourselves. I mean, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, men definitely have their own trauma. So with my book, it's really about, I don't care who you are, you got to go within yourself, and you've got to step into your fears, and you've got to be able to say, no, that doesn't work for me, and then risk being alone for a moment. And I think that's the thing that keeps most of us stuck, is the fear of rejection and abandonment, and I'm going to be alone.
I mean, you said the key word about risking that, but I mean, we always think that if we're going to risk something, that it's going to end poorly or the consequences. And like, what if we're risking that, but we find our, you know, the authenticity, we find what we've been desiring and so forth. I mean, that's powerful. That's life transforming right there. So, well, we have about a minute left. So let's see. I was going to ask you if anybody wants to get in touch with you today, do you have an email address or how would you like people to reach out to you if they want to ask you further questions?
Email would be perfect. Okay. Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, Cooper, LPCMH at gmail.com.
Okay, so Sandy Cooper, and I'm sorry, you said LC?
LPCMH.
LPCMH.com or gmail.com.
Yep, at
okay,
gmail.com.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Sandy, thank you for coming on the show today. Like I said, it's just a powerful book. And if you'd like to order the book, it's on Amazon.com, and you will thoroughly enjoy it, I guarantee. So, Sandy, thank you for the courage and your willingness to write this book. We really appreciate it. So, again, yes, absolutely. So I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Please join me next week, you know, Friday afternoons, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. And in the meantime, everybody, please be safe out there and behave yourselves. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.